This
is Mythical.
We're so excited to introduce you to Great Jones. Great Jones makes high-quality, thoughtfully designed cookware that's so stunning you won't want to put it away. From Dutch ovens to ceramic dishes to non-stick sheet pans, they've got you covered.
Heck yeah, they do. Their products come in a variety of amazing colors, from classic black and white to pinks, greens, yellows, and blues. And the best part, Nicole, everything's non-toxic.
Josh, I've been in the market for a kettle for months.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it a weird amount.
Yeah, I've bought like a bunch, returned a bunch, but I just got my hands on the Great Jones Fellow Kettle collab, and I got it in the color broccoli, and I'm so excited to make artisanal teas and coffees. I'm trying to get on my coffee game right now, and I'm so excited to use a gooseneck kettle. We have no idea.
I'm excited to use their yellow hot dish, aka casserole dish. Shout out to Minnesota and Fargo, North Dakota. I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, I'm an adult, I should have nice vessels to serve food out of.
Sure, fair.
Instead of just serving it on like stainless steel restaurant style things. And I like it. It's cute. It's got a good design. Bakes really well. Holds heat. I'm in, baby. And once you try Great Jones, you'll want to share it with friends. They make stunning gifts that are actually useful. Weddings, housewarming parties, birthdays, it's the perfect gift for the foodie in your life.
So upgrade your kitchen and replace those old, rusted hand-me-downs with bold, beautiful, long-lasting pieces from Great Jones. Get started today at greatjones.com and get an extra 15% off your first order with promo code SANDWICH. That's greatjones.com, promo code SANDWICH. Did you know that the middle of the galaxy smells like rum and tastes like raspberries?
Nicole, you sure you didn't just sneak a flask into Lush Cosmetics again? You're gonna end up on a list.
Are you two okay?
This is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What? Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show we take on the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Inaiti.
And we have a very special guest joining us today. She has a PhD from UC Davis. Go Aggies, baby! With a focus in flavor chemistry. She co-founded the Fermentation Lab at NOMA. She served as the science officer for Alton Brown's TV show, Good Eats. And she is the author of Flavorama, a guide to unlocking the art and science of flavor. Arielle Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Do we call you Dr. Johnson?
You can if you want,
yes!
But I never make anyone do that.
Oh my gosh. Have we had a doctor on the show before? Oh, yeah, Dr.
Literally
Mike.
Somebody called Dr. Mike.
Oh, yeah, but Dr. I like Dr. Johnson more.
And he was very particular about it. He was like, I need you to spell it out, D-O-C-T-O-R, because that's what we have the trademark in, I believe.
Wow, okay.
And he was very nice.
Go off, King.
But you should trademark
Dr. Johnson.
No, but thank you so much for joining us. You are one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life, which is really fantastic. And I love that you put all of that smarts into food and especially into this incredible book.
Absolutely.
Tell us, a couple of key takeaways from the book and how you got here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wrote this book. I mean, I studied flavor like as a scientist, but like I really got into it because I wanted to like make things more creative and delicious and amazing out in the real world. So, once I'd kind of like absorbed all there was to know about this, I'd talk to people about it, and like everyone loves flavor, but like nobody understands how it works, or
Fair.
Even that like there is any science involved, mm-hmm. or that there's anything understandable about it. So yeah, it's not just vibes. I mean, there are vibes involved, but there's like real molecules. So like flavor is taste and smell. I guess one takeaway is that smell is as important, if not more important,
sure.
for flavor than taste. Which takeaway? I have to think about every single takeaway and compare them together to find the most simplest one. I mean, I think like the big thing is, you know, you see like expert cookbooks or like books about science, and a lot of it's kind of intimidating and
yes.
like trying to tell you what to do and like that, oh, you have to like study this to use it. Like everything in here is designed to work with like the most casual of cooking. So it's really about like informing your intuition about cooking and understanding why you're doing what you're doing rather than telling you like what to do.
No, I love that. I use a phrase in the book, using flavor science as a liberating tool for innovating in the kitchen. Because so many people, they get locked into this idea. I know so many, I lovingly use the term like cooking nerds, right?
Sure.
I remember having somebody explain to me the science of the glutamate formation in Maillard reaction, yada, yada, as he made me a steak and his steak sucked. Right. God bless him.
Been there, done that.
But like you said, there are certainly like vibes involved.
Mm.
And whenever anybody says cooking is science, it's like absolutely. But everything is science. I have no idea how this microphone works right now whatsoever.
Science has something to do with it, I'm sure.
Of course. But that's what I love, that you actually digest it and you, like, give people usable information in
there.
Sure,
yeah.
Yeah, well, like, I, you know, as soon as I finished my PhD, I moved to Denmark and started working at a restaurant called Noma all the time.
Ever heard of it?
Yeah. Have you?
So, yeah, for, like, 2.5 years, I was constantly figuring out how to, like, talk to chefs and be like, well, I know you understand how this works in a practical way. And, like, I understand, like, the theory.
Sure.
But, like, how do I communicate this to you who, like, have not taken chemistry at a college level or something like that? So, like, once you, you know, explain that over and over and over and over and over again, then the the actual useful parts become much, much clearer.
Were you ever out there foraging alongside any of the chefs and stuff?
Oh, yeah, I have many memories trying to climb, like, elderberry trees.
Oh,
the flowers.
I was going to say fistful of currants. But
yeah,
nice
exactly.
To know
exactly.
That it's
you know, picking, like, black currant buds in the rain and stuff like that. Very glamorous.
That's awesome. Yeah, how cool.
I think it's fascinating because I've known a lot of chefs who, you know, drop out of school at age 15 and end up cooking.
Absolutely,
and I know a lot of people who, and intelligence is measured in many different ways, of course, but I know a lot. This one chef once explained to me the reason that you soak liver in milk is because things want to be how they exist in nature, and milk is a body fluid, ergo liver exists in the body naturally. It wants to be in a bodily fluid, and that's why milk makes liver taste good.
Okay.
You're sure this was a chef and not like a 17th
doula?
Century alchemist?
A weird doula you found off of Craigslist?
Yeah.
He put a lot of leeches on me, and I was like, this seems normal. A
lot of bloodletting.
But he made by far the best foie gras torchon I've ever had. And so it's almost like he's, you know, arriving at the correct conclusion using the wrong science.
Yeah.
What is the importance in, like, kind of understanding the right science?
Well, I mean, I think about it like the difference between being able to follow a recipe, which, like, is important, is like, you know, putting Waze up on your phone and following the GPS turn by turn. Understanding, like, how and why things actually work are, like, if your phone dies or Waze goes down, do you understand, like, the city's roads enough to find your way around?
No. No, Ariel, I don't.
Really? I do. I'm pretty good. But, like, drop me off in Frogtown? God help me. I cannot get around.
I once – I'm so sorry for this aside,
but
it just illustrates how I view the world and exist in it. I once – my phone died in my car and the charger wasn't working, and I have 2 turns to get home. I literally live 4 miles away in North Hollywood. We're in Burbank. It's one straight shot going west.
Okay.
And I was like, surely I know how to get home. I've been making this drive for 6 months. I ended up in what I thought was my neighborhood, and I looked around and nothing looked familiar. I finally got my phone to charge. I was 1.2 miles away.
Amazing. Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
Yeah, so
so wouldn't it be cool if you could do that?
100%. And I think a lot
this
of people
teaches you to do that.
A lot of people somewhat instinctively, we were just talking about the science of, like, reducing a sauce, and you have an incredible graph in there.
Such a great graph. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, no, 100%. The artwork in the book's incredible.
Yeah, it's very cute.
But for some people, like, for me, it was always intuitive.
Right, yeah.
You see steam rising, steam is
vapors,
water.
And you're, like, you're looking at how thick it's getting, and is it taking on a color, and, like, I mean, it's the kind of thing, you know, most of humanity's knowledge was developed through trial and error.
Sure.
And, you know, it took, like, inventing the scientific method to get, like, an idea about mechanism. So, yeah, I mean, for me, just, like, chemistry is really about mechanisms, and I would rather teach chemistry to somebody who can, like, sear a steak or do a foie gras torchon and have them, like, understand why they're doing what they're doing, than, like, start someone just off on pure chemistry and then be like, okay, now cook something tasty.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, the thing that we really wanted to get into today, we recorded another podcast with your homie Dave Arnold.
Yeah, Cooking Issues.
Cooking Issues. Check it out. And somebody asked a question about limoncello LaCroix, and you've never had it before. And I ran to the fridge to get you one.
Oh, yeah.
He told me about this.
I was so impressed.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I watched you, like, crack it open and sniff it, and you were like, there's obviously a vanillin compound. They're probably using sodium butyrate. I'm making up chemicals here. But it was really incredible to watch it in action.
Trademark that one.
And so we wanted to talk today about the concept of snack companies just sort of running out of flavors. There's been a recent run of Coca-Cola launched, what is it called, the Creators Program.
Sure.
Where they introduced a Coca-Cola Starlight flavor. And
oh,
we have
yeah.
right here, this is galaxy-flavored Torani syrup.
Wow.
If anyone can see,
cosmic.
And there was a, some sort of headline that came out in 2009 that the middle of the galaxy apparently tastes like raspberries and smells like rum. Do you know what any of that's about?
Okay, we might have to fact check me remembering the name of the molecule correctly. I believe, well, okay, so, like, taking a step back, like, flavor is molecules. And so, like, you know, some of those molecules are usually made by, like, plants or cooking, but, like, chemistry can happen anywhere. So, you know, there's lots of, like, carbon and methane and, like, the building blocks of the stuff floating out in space and crashing together and getting, like, hit by UV rays. Eventually, like, just from pure chemistry, you'll form, like, very simple sugars and other small molecules. My organic chemistry professor described it as space candy. So I believe the, in addition to sugars, I believe it's ethyl formate, which is like one of the smallest and simplest fruity smelling molecules that you can make that's also in raspberries and rum, gets made in this sort of like cosmic juice of molecules. And that's,
wild.
I mean, it's kind of like a, like if a smell molecule forms in space and no one's there to smell it, like, does it have an aroma? Does it have a flavor?
We got to send someone out there to smell it.
I know, yeah.
We got to send someone to the center of the galaxy.
Why did you
Nicole,
make direct eye contact with me?
What? You love adventures. You all say you don't get out of the house enough.
Space?
Yeah, I think you'd fare well in space.
I already poured this in my cup a little bit.
Oh, God. Oh, this
But
this
I also
color
mix it
is,
with hot water. Yeah, the color is alarming.
Is it, like, deep violet?
It's wow.
It is almost like
That's very blue.
Why do you think they went with that color, though? Because I would never equate the galaxy with, like, this weird muted violet color.
Well, I think, like, I mean, if you look at it head on, going back to my wine tasting days, yeah, if you look at it head on, it's, like, so dark that it's almost black. And then if you kind of tilt it a little bit, you see this, like, inky blue-purple tinge to it. I mean, I guess it kind of looks like the night sky. And maybe the closest thing to, like, the absence of color.
So a void?
Yeah, a void.
If you will.
It's void colored.
It's void colored, if you will.
Drink the void.
Drink the void.
Yeah, do the do is so 2008. But no, take a sip of this. I'm curious about what you're tasting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like very, very sweet, very raspberry. Mm-hmm. Like, not so much raspberry jam, but kind of like raspberry top notes. Mm. Light and heady.
Like you pushed a raspberry in between your fingers.
Yeah. Although now, I mean, like, I may be being thrown off by, like, the color and the viscosity. Mm-hmm. Tasting it, it kind of reminds me of, like, Dimetapp cough medicine. Did you ever take that when you were a kid?
Yeah,
the, like, purple grape stuff?
Totally.
I'm getting grape otter pop.
Yeah, it's not, like, full on. Actually, I mean, there's, like, a cotton candy kind of nuance to it.
Yeah.
Can I ask about the cotton candy thing? So a lot of people say we have tried all of these new Coca-Cola products. And the reason we said snack companies are running out of flavors is because I remember every new Coca-Cola product that came out when I was a kid, you know, you had, you know, Vanilla Coke was relatively new at the time. They did an orange Coke.
Cherry
they did a
Coke,
blood orange Coke when they launched these, like, fancy Diet Coke flavors. They did a raspberry Coke. They even had the Coke Black, the espresso Coke.
Oh, yeah, you love
came
that
out.
One, right?
But these are all flavors that exist within nature. And then it seems as if they've sort of run out. And now their flavors are called, like, Coca-Cola GX3000 partnered with Rosalia. Actually, that one was called Coca-Cola Move partnered with Rosalia.
Sure.
And all of their flavor notes are paired with, like, verbs and emotions. Mm-hmm. Like, this tastes like excitement and hope. And I think that's what the galaxy thing is. But a lot of the tasting notes that people get, they all say cotton candy.
Yeah.
What is that cotton candy thing that people are tasting?
Cotton candy, well, so, like, when you make cotton candy, you, like, melt sugar and spin it into this, like, fine filament. Basically, like, as soon as you start applying heat to sugar, it starts breaking down.
Sure.
And, like, kind of, it's almost like a truck hitting your car mirror and, like, shearing it off. That happens to it. And so it gets all these, like, kind of naked edges and then becomes, like, smellable in addition to tasteable. So ethyl maltol is one of those byproducts of, melting and the early caramelization of sugar. So it's basically, like, simple things formed when you start to break down sugar. But don't break it down all the way. That would be getting more into caramel. Mm-hmm. And cotton candy is mostly clear, not, caramelized.
That's fascinating because you like smell a bucket of sugar and you don't really smell anything.
Exactly,
but if you smelled cotton candy, even after it's cooled down, right, like it does have a smell to it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But also they're pouring, you know, their blue razzes and their pink, whatever that smell.
The association is just like a carnival vibe.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, blue raspberry is kind of the OG flavor that didn't exist.
Right.
And then they just conjure it from nothing, but now it certainly exists in our consciousness. Which I think is incredible. Have you noticed anything just like watching snack food trends change over the years from like a chemistry perspective?
Oh, I mean, like a big one is obviously like spicy snacks.
Sure.
Like they were not as popular, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And now like everything has to have a spicy version.
Everything.
And I mean, that's a molecule. That's capsaicin, the spicy component in peppers. Yeah, I mean, like a lot of these flavors, you know, even if they're named after things from nature, even if it's like, oh, this is cheese or like this is blue raspberry. I mean, not that there is blue raspberry, but raspberry. Yeah. They'll be named after things in nature, but like the way that these snacks are made, they'll take like all of these flavorless ingredients to make, you know, like the chip or the liquid or whatever, and then like add a flavor to it. So like the flavor comes in a bottle from a flavor house. There's like several of these places that just like compose flavors from, you know, bare molecules all day long.
So cool.
Kind of like, I don't know, early electronic music when you had to like program a synthesizer to make a noise.
So
you know, now they're making more abstract sounding ones, but even when all of the flavors had like a referent in reality, they were still not made from that thing. So you wouldn't like distill a piece of cheese and then make like cheese chips out of it. You would take like isolated butyric acid and diacetyl and like several other things and then like blend it together. So there's always this like element of making things up involved in like creating flavors. So it's not like necessarily that surprising that people would start being like, well, if we're making things up anyway, let's just, like, make everything up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I always thought about it from a perspective of, I knew Coke wasn't adding actual raspberry juice into their raspberry-flavored Coke, but at least the fact that it had a basis in reality, I was like, oh, this makes sense. But no, it was always, they were retrofitting the term raspberry into just a combination of chemicals pulled from the void.
Yeah.
And so now they might as well be doing that with Coca-Cola Soul Blast or... It was launched alongside Thousand-Year Blood War. It had an action flavor.
I actually can't tell if you're joking right
I'm serious.
Now.
Oh, okay. No, cool.
Did you say Thousand-Year Blood War was a flavor?
So Bleach Thousand-Year Blood War is, I believe, an anime.
Oh, it's an anime.
But Coca-Cola Soul Blast was launched in...
Thousand-Year Blood War.
Yeah.
Tastes like metal, I guess.
God, it surely
does. Like
and yeah, there was Coca-Cola Y3000.
Okay.
That tasting notes were, quote, liquid from maraschino cherries mixed with grape cough syrup. Even has a little bit of that medicinal burn was from one food critic trying it.
Wow.
Which is fantastic.
But my question is, what does Coca-Cola gain from doing all of these silly, wacky, wild things? Like, what's the point? It, like, being inventive, getting new people to come buy the Cokes? I don't understand the purpose of it.
I mean, I think, like, a lot of it is just marketing and, like, trying to maintain market share. I mean, like, Coca-Cola, just plain regular Coca-Cola as a, like, manufactured product is about, like, as close to perfect as you
get. I agree. Yeah. Why mess around with perfection just to be innovative?
I mean, like, you know, so if you, like, start it, it's almost like a tail wagging the dog thing instead of, like, oh, we want this thing, so we're going to respond to it. It's like, well, if we, like, make this thing that's crazy, people will talk about it and get excited about it. You'll be hearing the name Coca-Cola all the time.
Sure.
And then the next time you go to the store, you'll be like, maybe I'll try to find, you know, Warlord Skull Throne Coca-Cola. And then if you can't find it, you'll just buy, like, Vanilla Coke instead.
I know many of you look at me up here in my ivory tower and you say, wow, he's different. But no, no, dear listeners, I am just like you. I also have tons of subscriptions that I am paying for every single month and do not want or use. For instance, Nicole, how much European Grand Prix track and field are you watching?
Just about zero. Like 0% of my time is spent doing that.
Okay, so we're way different, right? I have to download a new subscription service generally from some European broadcasting corporation to watch these track meets. And then I always intend to cancel it, of course, after outdoor track and field season's over. But then those $12.99 a month payments, they just keep racking up. And sometimes you don't notice them because they just come through an app. But what if I told you there's a service that can completely get rid of those?
Wow, would this service be called Rocket Money?
God dang right it is, Nicole.
Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings.
With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, which I can't stress this enough, is almost all of them, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few tippity taps.
I love how the dashboard shows me this month's spending compared to last month, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Plus, they help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track.
God, I spend money on so much stupid stuff. Ugh. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you gotta do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you.
That's pretty awesome. I didn't know that they did that.
They should just hire you to call and complain to people.
So good at it.
Rocket
Money has over 5 million users and have saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/hotdog.
That's rocketmoney.com/hotdog. rocketmoney.com/hotdog. What was that thing that Lay's did where they had, what, like four
Us a flavor challenge.
Do us a flavor. Okay. Do you remember this?
I don't, actually.
So, Josh, I think you might know more about it, but they
I submitted. I submitted to Lay's Do Us a Flavor.
You did. Like, they decided on, like, a cappuccino flavor, a chicken and waffles flavor, and
they
some
sure
other
did.
Ones. I don't know if you want to, like...
A lot about the Coke thing and the new stuff, they definitely... All of their sales are from Diet Coke and regular Coke.
Okay.
That's like a vast, it's like 90% plus.
Yeah.
And it's these new things that just get their name spiked
so
media.
Silly.
It's the same way that 7-Eleven introduces a Halo 3 Mountain Dew flavored Slurpee so they can sell more cigarettes and lotto tickets.
Fair. Yeah.
Right? It's not about the Slurpees.
The
it's about getting
the loss leader.
The loss leader,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's fascinating. But no, the Lay's Do Us a Flavor Challenge, it came out in, what was it, 2014 was the first time they did it. Ooh. They had 14.4 million submissions to it. They basically asked people, hey, we've run out of flavors. We need you to submit new ones. They did, but it was a really fantastic campaign, and I got really excited about it until I actually tasted all of them, and there wasn't a single flavor that I was like, oh, this could actually compete with the other one. So we'll go through the winners from every year. There were a lot. First year, bacon mac and cheese, which—
Makes
a fair amount of sense, right?
And it was like the height of
bacon
mania.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but that bacon flavor, it just bothers me so much.
I love liquid smoke. I love liquid smoke.
Don't love it.
I remember, okay, so one, I don't think it was the Lay's Do Us a Flavor Challenge, but it was in their era where they eventually flipped it to like the Lay's Taste of America and then Passport to Flavor, where they were just
getting international.
No, they did, because they had a Sichuan chicken flavored Lay's chips that I ruined a fantasy football draft party by, because that was the only chips I got. And
were they like mala flavored? Did they have like Sichuan peppercorn?
I wish.
Like licking a battery?
I wish they did. Also, we made mala chips here when we made our pufferfish flavored chips.
Sure, I remember.
Which is really fun. But no, they had this like deeply just burnt meat flavor to the chips that was really unsettling. And I looked on the list of ingredients, and it said like Lay's natural browned wok flavor, and it had a trademark on it.
Oh, okay.
So wok hay?
Exactly.
Literally.
They made wok hay into a flavor?
And boy, does it not translate on chips.
Oh my gosh.
But how would you go about like making something like that from scratch?
So the first thing I would do, like wok hay flavor, for example, is I would fire up the trusty gas chromatograph mass spectrometer.
What was that?
So a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. You remember like earlier when I was talking about my PhD, and it was like we're all just a bunch of chemists measuring different things. So a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer is how you measure flavor molecules. Flavors are mostly like a soup of many molecules together. So this machine, this instrument, very carefully like separates them all from each other, and then like tells you what they are all in a row, and then you can also like, you know, calculate how much of each you have if you do more work. But yeah, so like the first thing would be like, okay, so I'd like make some wok food, or maybe even just like, you know, heat up a wok really high
with
and
some
then
oil.
Yeah. And you know, we have like different ways of like collecting smells, essentially. So you basically get like, it's like a little needle, and it has it's a little needle. And you can push a like thread that's inside the needle out, and it's like coated with this like coating that's very sticky to smells. So you like
collects it.
Yeah, like extract it, like put it in the, we call it the headspace, because, you know, smells kind of, well, the reason you can smell them is because they travel through the air. So they're like, you can't see it, but you'd imagine like there's your food, and then there's this like cloud of flavor molecules above it in the headspace. Collect those molecules, put them in the gas chromatograph, separate them all from each other, figure out what they were, and then go about trying to see if there's like, is there a commercial source for this? Do we need to just like cook a wok 1,000 times and then, like, extract it and mm-hmm. put that in somehow. I mean, that is kind of how, like, natural flavors work.
Wait, how do natural flavors work?
Well, okay, so, like...
Josh and I are in a state of shock right now. Yeah, this is incredible. We love this. We're like basking in the glow of your intelligence. Thank you so much. Keep going.
Well, okay, so, like, you ever look on, like, an ingredients list and it'll say, like, natural and artificial flavors? Sure. So artificial flavors are just made from, like, from scratch, from, I don't know, maybe you... Like, they used to make vanilla flavor by taking wood pulp and the woody part of wood, which is called lignin. It's like the thing that makes wood like wood and not like a bendable stem.
Got it.
If you break that up, it'll release basically vanilla smell. So that's one of the reasons why like smoke smells kind of sweet, because you're literally like breaking down the wood and then creating these like vanilla-like molecules.
They would never take vanilla bean, and that would be a natural flavor.
Well, so then to make a natural flavor, that is like flavors that come from a food that they have, you know, carefully extracted out with, I don't know, some kind of organic solvent and purified and then bottled. So like, I guess the thing with natural flavors is, you know, you could have something labeled as a natural flavor, like natural raspberry flavor. Does not mean it comes from a raspberry. It means that the components come from something that was once food. So they might then be blended together. Yeah. Into something that resembles raspberry that mm-hmm. technically is natural because they didn't do any like chemical synthesis. They just did extraction, but comes from things that aren't raspberry.
Fascinating. Yeah. There's been a, and I've sort of talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I have two things I want to address. Should we start with beaver buttholes?
I mean, why not?
What's the deal with the beaver?
Why didn't we start with that from
that's
the top?
That's what I'm saying. What's
Josh
the deal?
Yeah, yeah.
There's the thing about the beaver buttholes, right? Mm-hmm. What's going on with those?
Oh, are you talking about castoreum?
That's the one.
Castoreum.
Yeah. So, you know, if smell is a big part of flavor, so if you know stuff about fragrances, then that also helps enhance your understanding of flavor and vice versa. So, like, a big thing with fragrances is, like, basically the idea that, like, having a small amount of something really nasty makes all the nice stuff, like, much richer and nicer and more amazing. So,
like ambergris?
Exactly. Ambergris, which is, like, a type of whale vomit. Mm-hmm. Castoreum, which is
a beaver
anal gland. There's a lot of deer musks and things like that. So if you smell them in pure form, it's, like... I mean, it's musk. There's a reason that we use the term musk for other stuff. Really intense, really unpleasant, but like just a little bit of it with, you know, a bunch of other flower smells or something like that gives it like gravitas and deliciousness. So yeah, just a little bit of something horrible makes things taste great.
It's like life.
Lays.
Exactly.
Beaver anal gland. It's coming at you in 2024.
Castoreum chips.
You talked about spicy chips, and I remember talking to somebody who was a flavor scientist for Lay's, and they were talking about how it had just become an arms race on how spicy can you make a chip, but there's obviously going to be a cliff that drops off where it's too spicy for people to consume.
Yes.
The Packy One Chip Challenge nearly felled me.
Sent some people to the hospital, I think.
Somebody died recently.
Somebody died?
Oh, my gosh.
Heart condition, died. It's tough out there. So point is, the chips are so spicy they're killing people.
Yeah.
They've made chips so sour now that, you know, Lil Xan went to the hospital.
Like a lesion on your tongue.
Oh, yeah, remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, and so there's kind of nowhere to go in the spicy or sour sector anymore that they haven't hit. What do you think the next frontier is for these snack companies?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, there is like an upper limit to how salty you can get. Probably as bitter as possible is not going to fly. I mean, umami is, you know, kind of like the dark horse of flavor. A lot of people don't know what it is or it's hard to identify. It's basically the taste of savoriness.
Sure.
So, I mean, I guess you could dip a chip in MSG, which is, you know, glutamate. It's pure umami. And then have, like, the most umami chip that you could ever have.
Wow.
And that would be, like, very, 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 like, brothy and rich tasting, but just, like, completely umami.
They already made that, and it came out, like, 40 years. No. It's called chicken in a biscuit.
Have you had
a chicken in a biscuit?
Oh, it's been a while, but yeah.
Pretty iconic.
It's literally MSG and onion powder, and I swear to God, it is the greatest tasting thing in the world.
It is delicious.
But no, it would be fascinating to see places go into the black garlic territory, finding these things that have a ton of umami in them, but that might be a little bit limiting. And talking about loss leaders, the most popular flavor of potato chip is plain, and it outsells every single other flavor 2-1.
As it should be.
I refuse to eat a plain chip unless I'm dipping.
I love plain chips.
Unless I'm dipping.
Or salt and pepper
chips.
If it's
a really good plain chip, then I... Interestingly, sorry, salt and pepper chips. I love salt and pepper chips, but okay. Have you noticed that, like, it's not just salt and black pepper? There
sure,
is, like,
yeah.
the savory, garlicky thing,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it carries yeah. it. Yeah.
Do you like that
it
or not?
It can exist on its own.
I mean, I like it. It's tasty. I would enjoy the opportunity to have just plain black pepper and see what that was what
probably
that was
like. Probably
would
be boring, though.
It might be. I mean, it might, I don't know. It might be like, you know, having like a palate cleanser almost.
A palate cleanser.
After the umami bomb.
I think the chip world should make a complete harsh left turn and go into like weird sweet. Flavors. I think a blue raspberry chip would be an absolute trip and something that we've never, like, imagine like Laffy Taffy banana, but you're chewing in a chip instead of it being like a candy experience. Like I think that's something as a human being we haven't seen before, and I really want us to like explore and see what'll happen with
like
that.
An Appletini chip.
I
oh
would.
Oh my God, Midori sour chip? Nicole loves Midori sours.
You remember?
Dude, I started making Midori sours because of you.
Oh my
and
God.
I started making Midori spritzes because of you. I have a whole ass bottle of Midori at
cry.
My home. Cheetos made Sweetos.
Mm.
They made Sweetos.
I mean, if you hit the right, like, sweet, salty thing, I think that's, like, really nice for people.
Honey
I
butter
mean,
chips?
Exactly. Honey butter chips are delicious.
Those are ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some flavors that, like, would be too unfamiliar for people in a chip context. Kind of like this, like, wok-hei didn't work as a chip. There's, like, there's actually, like, a sweet spot where, like, people like things to be, like, novel but also familiar. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a point in the middle of, like, medium familiarity, medium novelty that, like, everyone loves.
The maple bacon bar,
and then it starts
to
dropping
me.
Off.
Yeah, the maple bacon bar is, like, the perfect
middle
point where it came out at the time. And it was like, oh, maple syrup, bacon, breakfast plate, donut. Like, this all makes
sense.
And then it was all downhill from there. I'm curious to see where stuff goes. The rebranding of Sierra Mist to Starry, I think, points in a big direction.
Is that what Starry is?
Yeah.
I just noted, I thought it was some kind of off-brand, like, you know, Dr. Phillips instead of Dr. Pepper.
So no
I grew up
more,
on Dr. Shasta.
So no more, like, mountainy, rangy, we don't want that
anymore.
Yeah,
no, that's like pastoral, rugged, pioneer, salt of the earth.
Happy.
No, now we're reaching out to the stars.
Happy.
We're optimistic. We're living in the digital age. We're in the cloud. We don't exist in physical form anymore.
I totally thought it was, like, a self-confidence thing, like, star, like you're
like,
a starry.
Like,
oh, it sure is.
Shoot for the moon, and even if you miss, you're landing among the starry.
That's where I went. You were thinking it was in the galaxy. I was thinking it was all about, like, you know, self-esteem.
What if I told you, whatever you think, you're right as long as you drink the soda.
That's exactly
that's what
they
you're going. Whereas Sierra Mist is only one thing. You're John Muir Lawson.
Who likes real things? We like AI and the cloud and, you know, no gravity and stuff like that.
And we sure like to taste them.
We do.
Do you want a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value, exclusive member deals, and recipe inspiration?
Yeah, man. Then you want ButcherBox. ButcherBox gets high-quality meat and seafood delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always.
They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood that is humanely raised, which means they don't use antibiotics or added hormones.
No, my favorite thing, though, Nicole,
mm-hmm.
it's the convenience.
Me too. You know, I hate going to the grocery store, surprisingly.
Do you really? I get it. It's stressful stuff.
Yeah, I don't like going that much. Maybe like once or twice a month. Other than that, not really.
I don't like judgmental butchers either.
Yeah, me.
You know,
either.
You order meat, they're always like, what are you going to do with it? And I tell them, and like, you shouldn't cook it like that. And it's like, well, I think we should just leave this relationship to me getting the meat from you, sir and or madam. Anyways, with ButcherBox, they just deliver a big old box of meat to your door,
it's
which
awesome,
is, it's
yeah.
like Christmas every day, except we're Jewish, you know, and I still eat the pork.
That's
it's
okay.
like somebody's.
You can do whatever you want. Today, ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off of your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/hotdog, and use code hotdog to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box.
That's butcherbox.com/hotdog and code hotdog.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Nicole and Ariel, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the universe. Well, it's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
Crash rolls. All right, get to the first opinion.
My name is Nick. I'm from Michigan, a longtime listener, Mythical Kitchen, best YouTube channel out there.
Hell yeah, brother.
Thank you. So watching the shows, I always thought that the blood lava cake from Food Fears and that the blood taco from Will It Taco Reheated looked like the most interesting stuff Josh ever made.
Mm.
And after going to London for my honeymoon and having black pudding, I have to say blood really should be put in more dishes here in America. And I'm going to be keeping an eye out for dishes like that. Hope you guys have a great day. Thanks for all the awesome stuff you do.
I agree. I love blood.
I love blood in food. I mean, it sounds like we're being like edgy, but like black pudding, morcilla, dinuguan in Filipino cuisine, all delicious.
Sundae from Korea. There's a French jugged hair dish where they bleed the hair and then they cook it in its own blood and then they emulsify the blended liver into it, and it's all a metaphor for Christ being risen in the springtime.
So cool.
Oh, so good. But it, like, the flavor actually comes through. And all of these things are just, an animal exists, and you should try and use all the parts.
Well, exactly.
Of it,
yeah, it's about not wasting this thing that, like, absolutely, gave its life for us to eat it.
100%.
Yeah. Americans need to have more open minds about eating awful organs and blood.
Yeah. What are the flavors? Because there's some people that are very sensitive to it. Like Rhett and Link, the founders of this company, Link especially, like, he hates the taste of liver, of blood, of a lot of awful. What are the actual things that you're tasting?
I think the thing that turns a lot of people off is the, like, metallic flavor.
Sure.
We can taste metal ions. They're usually bitter tasting. So the like metallic flavor is actually an aroma. And it's kind of the same sort of mechanism as when you like pick up a penny and then your fingers smell like a penny.
Sure.
The metal will actually like catalyze other molecules like fatty acids and things like that to break down and form into like smaller volatile molecules. So you get like aldehydes and the smell, the flavor of like raw meat that can be like quite intense in like blood and stuff is epoxydecenal is the molecule. So I think some people are especially put off by those flavors.
Damn, that's rad. That's so rad.
But when you cook it, it kind of gets rid of that, doesn't it? That metallicness of blood kind of goes away, right? When you cook blood?
Yeah, I mean, like,
or maybe you mask it with all the onions and garlic. Yeah,
it depends. I think, well, and like, you know, everybody has, we have like 400 different types of olfactory receptor.
Mm.
And so everyone has like a different kind of profile of, do they have more of this one or more of that one? So it's definitely possible for some flavors to be like much more intense to, you know, person A versus person B.
Fair.
And that can be good or that can be like off-putting.
There's a stat that people very casually throw around that taste is actually 70% smell.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any validity to that number or how does that interact?
So I think what they're referring to is that like flavor is both taste and smell. So like strictly speaking, taste is just what happens on your tongue with taste buds. So like sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami. If you're talking like metallic aromas or roasted meat or coffee or floral or fruity, whatever, that's all smell.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever had a cold, or like more likely if you got COVID in the last 4 years and you like lose your sense of smell and like food tastes really flat and boring, it doesn't actually change the taste of the food, literally speaking. That is just flavor minus smell. So it's like taste without smell. So if you think about how muted that is when you can't smell versus when you can, obviously, like, smell is a huge part of that. It's like, I don't know actually know how you would, like, quantify the percentage. Sure. I think it, like, depends on the situation. I mean, because also smells without tastes can be a little weird seeming as well. But, yeah, I guess as a thought-provoking statistic that makes people appreciate that smell is a big part of flavor.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, 70%. Why not?
Science communication, 100% accurate all the time, 60% of the time.
All models are wrong, but some are useful.
Hi, Josh and Nicole. This is Grace from Buffalo, New York, and I've got some opinions and questions.
Oh, my gosh.
So, as someone from the city where chicken wings originated from, why do places outside of Buffalo call them buffalo wings? Mm. They should be called chicken wings only and should be ordered as hot, medium, mild, or barbecue.
Mm.
I hate the term buffalo wings. Also, I'm a vegetarian, but I will always defend the proper way to eat chicken wings. You must eat them with blue cheese, which I find disgusting, but eating them with ranch calls for war.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening. Love y'all. And go Bills.
Go Bills Mafia. So, like, you don't call them French fries in France.
No, you call them frites.
You call them frites. You call them fries.
Yeah.
You don't call them buffalo wings in Buffalo.
I call them frites.
I went to a restaurant in the year of our Lord 2018 in El Reno, Oklahoma, and they had freedom fries on the menu.
Oh, my God.
I don't even remember why people were mad at France.
I think it's like Iraq war or something like that.
But like,
this is like a 20-year-old argument.
Give it up. But anyways, I get that. People from Buffalo, they have two foods that were invented there, but nobody cares about beef on weck anymore.
Unfortunately.
Have you ever had a beef on weck?
Yeah. So super good.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That should have been
Better than buffalo wings, I would say.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with you.
She mentioned that blue cheese is disgusting. Are you a blue cheese fan?
In certain contexts, I'm a blue cheese fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like good to balance out the like high acid, high spicy of buffalo sauce.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is interesting. So, like, buffalo wings are fascinating to me as a case study of how to balance flavors. Because you just have capsaicin and vinegar and salt.
Yeah.
And then you throw basically pure fat, like dairy fat, into the mix.
Yeah.
And it's this incredible alchemy, and you can use that knowledge for anything. But in terms of pairing that with ranch versus blue cheese, from a science perspective, what do you think works better? Because we had this debate, ranch versus blue cheese.
We sure did.
I'm a ranch guy, perennially.
I'm a blue cheese girl.
I love the herbs.
I think specifically, I generally prefer ranch and ranch-like dressings, categorically, if I had to pick one. But, like, specifically for the wings, I think there's something about the, like, funk of blue cheese that just, like, really synergizes well with that, like, punchy, spicy, pungent thing of the buffalo sauce. I would go with blue cheese, definitely, if offered the choice.
Lactonic mold wins again, Josh.
Go with the science
words. I know
words. Damn.
But the thing that, like, I'm confused about is why not put respect on Buffalo Wings' name? Like, what's the problem?
Self-loathing Buffalonians,
man. Let me
tell
you, being from Buffalo, you should be proud that one of the greatest things that come out of your town, city, is the chicken wing and covered in delicious sauce. I would say no. Do some deep-seated reflection. Think about what you're saying here, Grace.
I do find it difficult to believe that no one ate a chicken wing before someone in Buffalo decided to. Then that, like, as a style of wing, I think would be properly called buffalo wing.
Right?
It's sort of like, you know, you can't call it champagne unless it's from the Champagne region of France. If it's the wrong sauce on buffalo wings, it's just sparkling chicken wing, I guess.
Can we make it?
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Of course we can make it.
Taco Bell put Pop Rocks in a burrito like a couple years ago and tried to make a sparkling burrito, and it was not good.
Were the Pop Rocks sweet?
Yeah, they were.
Oh,
they were just, I know. Yeah, you can make an unsweetened Pop Rocks, but like sugar gives it
like
that.
Less sweet, yeah.
Yeah.
Use like isomalt or something.
No.
We'll go to the drawing board and see what we can do.
We made a Baja Blast isomalt cage once. Do you remember that?
Of course I remember that.
It was encasing a Baja Blast Panna Cotta.
Okay.
My God. We used to be on the cutting edge. Now we're washed.
Yeah,
Mythical
we're
Kitchen got washed.
We're washed.
Hi, Josh and Nicole. So I've been dating a guy for a long time.
Congrats.
Who has been convinced by his parents that he is lactose intolerant.
Oh.
And I have spent our entire relationship building a menu and buying the groceries and cooking surrounding his supposed dietary restriction. I decided to start experimenting with small doses of dairy.
Oh my
and,
gosh. I hope she got an IRB form for that.
There's been no reaction whatsoever. And if he knows that he eats something at a restaurant or orders something in that has dairy in it, he has a reaction. If I put it in the food that we make at home, he is none the wiser. And
uh-oh.
I feel kind of bad about it, but...
You should.
Yeah. So I guess this is more of a confession than an opinion.
Yeah.
You guys have a good day.
Okay, this is like the opposite. So it's like Munchausen's by proxy, right? Is this what we're... I'm not a doctor.
A little bit, yeah.
I'm not a doctor, even though I would be a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Josh.
And Nurse Josh says, hell yeah.
There's... I cannot condone this behavior. I'm so sorry.
I stepping away from the science advice and into the relationship advice, like, I've been married for a while, and, like, sometimes you really need to, like, give up your need to be right about some things.
Yes, thank you. As an married person, I agree.
Yeah, and just, like, accept the irrational, crazy thing that they insist on.
Yep.
I mean, if it's everything, then fine, you deal with it.
But you don't need to be right all the time.
Well, and it's like... I'm sure I have idiosyncrasies that drive people crazy, but, to a certain extent, just accepting those about people is, you know.
Correct.
A nice thing to do.
You're right.
Yeah.
Now, I ain't married, but I'm hurtling towards it, and I also have a fiancé with fake food allergies.
Okay.
Hear me out. She's allergic to, quote, beans, but that is a very large category.
Okay.
And so she's not allergic to, like, beans, right? She's allergic to something within a bean that has caused a reaction to her before.
Yeah.
And when I say she's lying, she's not lying. But chickpeas she can eat. That's the one that she knows she can eat.
Yeah.
Which
those are, like, kind of the highest protein beans. So.
Lectin? Is that the protein that tends to cause negative reactions?
I don't know. I mean, there are lectins, but that's, like, it's, like, a different kind of molecule than a protein. I would be curious, is her reaction, like, indigestion or, like, a rash?
Vomit. Like, straight, expelling.
So, yeah, I mean,
both
like...
Both
whole. Oh, my God. TMI.
I get that with oysters, so, unfortunately. I mean, so, like, there are, like, basically forms of soluble fiber in beans, fructooligosaccharides and stuff. That's, like, what gives you gas if you have beans. But it sounds like she's reacting to something more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't Pythagoras die from eating fava beans?
Or, like, yeah.
My brother-in-law has that.
Fava beans. Yeah.
My brother-in-law, if he eats or is near fava beans, he will die.
Wow.
But maybe not that dramatic. But, like, he cannot consume a fava bean.
Yeah.
It's some sort of, like, genetic thing in his, like, makeup.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, she's allergic to beans, can consume chickpeas. Right. And I'm like, what about lentils? And she's like, no, I can't have that. And she's she doesn't know at all, but I just don't push it. And I don't cook anything with any bean or bean-like things. And when we go out to restaurants, and we will go to, like, a traditional Lebanese restaurant or something, and she will go, can you ask them if it's only chickpeas and the hummus? Mm-hmm. And I go, yes, this is. They are all speaking Arabic in the back. Hummus is literally Arabic for chickpea.
Yeah.
It's only that. And instead of saying that now, I just ask the server, and they side-eye me. And that's love.
That is love. That's
correct.
A very mature take. Yeah.
Whether or not they can process lactose is not the point. It's about trust. There's so many good lactose alternatives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. This is Martin from Minneapolis. Two opinions. First, kale is a maligned piece of produce. Kale is just spinach that learned to stand up for itself. Everywhere I used to use spinach, I use kale. Second, really, the only beverage you should have with a meal is water. You can have something else as an accompaniment, but you're not using it for lubrication. Those are my two opinions. Thanks for your work.
How much lube does this man need?
I'm confused that the, like, primary role of your accompanying beverage is lubrication and not some kind of sensory experience. I mean, I guess lubrication is a sensory experience. But,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it that way.
I mean, I think the idea is that it's not so much that the tannins in the wine help the food go down faster, but that you get, like, an enhanced experience. You get synergy between, like, what you're drinking and what you're eating, and it could bring out different stuff or balance it. I mean, like, drink water if you want to drink water, but...
Is he, like, just eating old crusty bread heels like an 18th century French laborer?
You know,
just like...
They actually make like thickeners to put in liquids.
Thicket.
So that like people like very elderly people who like don't have the muscle control to swallow, can swallow it. So like maybe he would like if he's like that concerned about lubrication, he might want.
Maybe hear me out. Maybe
out,
you know what I think? I think my friend Martin is their name. I think they chew their food. And drink it. You know what I mean? I think they chew it, keep it in their mouth, and use the water to push it down.
If I'm in a rush, I'll do that. You know, we've all been there.
I mean, from sensory science, I do know that there are people that are high salivators and low salivators. So you can vary in the volume of saliva that you produce. So it could be that he is lacking in that arena.
Incredible.
It's very possible.
Al pastor tacos and a real sugar Coke is the best. Or the, what is it, the sangria soda? That's a sensory experience. That's a special thing. Even if you're not drinking alcohol with your meal, that's a fun time.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of, like, very promiscuous beverage pairing.
Oh, my
God. Not just wine. Yeah.
Nothing better.
Yeah. What about the kale and the spinach?
Oh, the kale.
Eh.
Everything's so cyclical now, right?
Right.
We went from kales just lining the Pizza Hut salad bar.
Yeah, ornamental.
They were the world's largest buyer of kale for a period.
Yeah.
And then we went to, you know, Beyonce wearing a kale sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. And then we went to kale sucks. And then now we're back to actually kale's good. And round we go. It'll be turnip greens tomorrow, mustard greens the next.
Well, I think people should eat more turnip greens.
I would love. I was going to say.
I agree entirely.
Yeah.
Let's eat more turnip greens.
Let's have a more biodiverse
rainbow chard
leaf diet.
Let's bring it.
I love me some chard. You know what? I'll say I hate baby spinach. Give me that mature spinach.
Oh
yeah, I want something that'll like stand up.
Really?
I mean, talk about spinach has grown a backbone.
Yeah, 100%. Bloomsdale, a big leaf.
I disagree with the both of you. Baby spinach is leaps and bounds better than regular spinach.
Well, are we talking about cooked spinach or raw spinach?
Both ways.
Oh,
both.
No. Not cooked baby spinach.
Oh,
it just turns
God.
Into like nothing.
Doesn't got no
so
taste.
So does regular spinach.
Yeah,
you're eating
the
stems.
It's got like more texture.
I can't with you two.
It tastes like char.
It's more flavor. It's like richer tasting almost.
Kale, like regular curly kale, does it? I mean, I cook with a lot of curly kale because it's just there and available and I need greens and I put flavors in it.
I like dino kale.
Like lacinato?
Lacinato.
Tavolinero, I think.
I think they're the same thing.
I think they're the same thing. I mean, that's why I like mustard greens, for example, because it does have like kind of more things beyond vegetal that you can enjoy.
I will say, I run through about a head and a half to two heads of cabbage a week.
Cabbage is delicious. Cabbage is amazing.
Big cabbage guy. Cabbage is having a moment.
The world has run on cabbage for thousands of years, and I will continue that tradition. My people subsisted on beets, cabbages, and small frozen river fish, and that's how I want to eat.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
On that note, thank y'all for stopping by the podcast, and thank you so much to Dr. Ariel Johnson. Dr. Ariel Johnson. Google that one. Dr. Ariel Johnson, author of Flavorama. Check it out. Ariel, where can they find you elsewhere?
Online? Sorry.
Wherever.
No, like, what's your location? What's
my location. Sorry.
What's your apartment number?
Where are you? My social security number. I live in New York, so come check me out in New York if you're in town.
Hell yeah.
Oh, if you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, give us a ring and leave us a message at 833-DOG-1.
I fudged the outro. My computer went to sleep and I was Googling other things. That's why this is clunkier than it used to be. If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, give us a ring. Nicole, just let me have this one. See y'all next time.